Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Doug Kelly, and I'm here with tonight's host, John Rossi. Hey, John.
Hey, everyone. How you doing?
Glad to see we've got people coming into the chat room.
Yeah. But, wow, we even have someone coming all the way from Australia tonight.
Wow. I wonder who that could possibly be.
Hey, Ingrid, what time is it down there?
It's tomorrow morning. Wow, now that's something you don't see every day. I'm going to let you talk, John.
All right. Well, folks, tonight's a big night for us. We have a special guest tonight, Sharon Coyle, who is the proprietress of Rolling Hills Asylum in Bethany, New York. Hey, Sharon, how you doing?
It looks like Sharon was lost. Unbeknownst to me, let me get her back on the line. Actually, it looks like she's offline. She must have lost internet. You go ahead and talk about all the wonderful things, and let me see if I can get Sharon on the phone.
Okay. All right, this might be a little bit difficult because, as Sharon will probably be telling you, she's located up in Bethany, New York, and I'm not saying that's located at the edge of the world, but when you're on the third floor at Rolling Hills looking out towards the east, I think you can see the edge there. So it doesn't surprise me that they may be having some internet difficulties up there. Rolling Hills Asylum is an incredible place. I was able to investigate there about 6 weeks ago, and that's where I met Sharon and asked her if she'd be interested in coming on the show, which she said she would. Years ago, I lived in a haunted house, and I thought that was pretty cool. And Sharon Cole lives in a haunted asylum, which I guess really outcools me. And hopefully she'll be here soon to talk about that.
She just came back online. So let me get her back on.
All right.
One ringy dingy, two ringy dings. You want me to just give you the play-by-play here?
Yeah. someone's asking if I have crickets. No, it's Doug.
Yeah. It's Doug. And we're live, John. John?
Yeah? You're on. Did we lose her again?
No, we have her.
No, I'm here. I called back in, and then you called me. So I'm here. Hello.
Okay, hey, Sharon. Nice to have you tonight. I understand today was a wild day for you, so we really appreciate you taking the time. So, Sharon, everyone wants to know, what's it like to own your very own haunted asylum?
Do you want the really good ghosty version or the reality version?
I think we'd like to hear both versions, because I think both are going to be entertaining in different ways.
Well, like the ghosty version is... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah, so the ghosty version is fabulous. I mean, it's amazing activity all the time. Even during the day, we'll hear disembodied voices. I was sitting in my – oh, did I lose you guys?
No, you're here.
Are you
no.
there? Okay, all right. I was in my office the other day, and I have a padlock on something, and I was watching it flip up and flip down, and somebody was, like, flipping the padlock. And I said, come on, you're flipping me out. I'm all by myself here. Or you're flipping me out. Stop doing it. And it just went, stop, and it ended. But that part's really cool. There's a lot of activity. It's really interesting. And people are coming out of the woodwork and stopping by and saying that they had worked there before, they knew somebody that used to live there or was part of the nursing home. So I'm meeting a lot of really interesting people.
So tell us about some of the challenges. Like, how long has it been since you've had electricity and running water in your house?
I haven't lived in the house because I had no electricity or running water. I should be in the house this weekend. We've got water. The toilet's getting connected. I failed at that. And so, I should be in there this weekend. But I've been living in a 60-square-foot room for 3.5 months.
Wow. So,
yeah. No refrigerator, no nothing. But that's okay. It's all for the greater good.
Okay. So, Sharon, I mean, everyone's probably thinking, like, whatever possessed this woman to buy this asylum that's out in the middle of nowhere?
Well, most people think I'm nuts, which is appropriate considering I live in an asylum. So that's kind of really worth saying.
I live in an asylum.
You're nuts. Well, perfect. I'm right at home. Now, I actually had been there a couple of years ago during a Darkness Radio event and had an amazing 3 days there and had some incredible, incredible evidence and experiences, and it stuck with me. I mean, I'm from California, originally from New Hampshire, but California, and I had a group of 250 people out there in California and a private team, and used to do a lot of different, you know, paranormal stuff. But every week or two, I'd always go back and look at my pictures and listen to my, you know, EVPs, and it just always stuck with me. And then when I heard that it was for sale, I had a really strong reaction in a not so normal way, and I actually called my husband at work, and I was crying, and he goes, what's wrong, did somebody die? And I'm like, no, Rolling Hills is closing down, the ghosts are going to be left all alone, the place is going to be bulldozed down, who knows what's going to happen. And I was just way over the top emotional about it. I thought, you know, that's not normal, and I should really take a look at you know, the property and see what I can do, because it's part of American history. I mean, the poor farms are, you know, the prelude to the welfare system, basically. And there aren't too many of them standing anymore. And, I don't have any kids, and I want to leave a legacy. And maybe preserving this property and going forward in the paranormal with Rolling Hills is my legacy. I don't know. But I just feel like I was chosen for it rather than I chose it.
Well, it was really obvious when I was there the amount of work that you're putting into the place in terms of trying to stabilize it and preserve it for the future.
We're trying. I mean, I just had some roofers come out giving me estimates on different – we have a few small issues with different parts of the roof, not major things, but just, you know, little places here and there. So, yeah, we're doing our best. We're trying.
Hey, Sharon, can you give the folks a brief history of the actual site?
Sure. Way back in the late 1700s, it was actually a tavern on the property. And I'm not sure when that tavern got eliminated, but come 1827, the county of Genesee decided to open up, actually it was probably before then because it actually opened up in 1827. So 1825, 1826, they decided to open up a poor farm to put all their the people that needed help, the orphans, the widows, the people that lost their farms, the mentally unstable, the people that were sick with tuberculosis or that were handicapped mentally or physically, even some criminals. And they decided to open up the Genesee County Poor Farm. And at that point, from what I understand, the counties were aligned a little differently, and Genesee was actually a little bit bigger and differently configured. So where East Bethany is was actually the center of Genesee County. So it was very centrally located at that time. And so it opened up on January 1st, 1827 as a poor farm. It was all self-sufficient, had about 200 acres, cattle, pigs, chickens, dairy farm. They actually made their own butter and cheese and made their own bread, and they had gardens. It was really self-sufficient. And as time went on, they discovered they needed another kind of municipal type of building, which was an infirmary. So they built the famous building, which is on there now, the big tri-cornered building that has the cupola as the infirmary in 1938. And in 1958, they added the East Wing, which is the long flat-top building, as a men's dormitory. And then soon after that, not too many years after that, they went co-ed and it became a nursing home until 1972, when they built a new nursing home. And they moved all the patients out, and the property sat empty for about 20 years. And from that point on, there were two other owners, possibly three other owners. They made a carriage museum, an antiques mall. The previous owner took it over, had it as an antiques mall, and discovered it was actively haunted. And that was about 8 years ago or so, seven, 8 years ago. And now I'm here.
Cool.
So yeah.
Your whole life, was this part of your plan that, you know, someday when I grow up, I'm going to own a haunted location?
Oh, hell no. It's going to be rich and you know, live on a vineyard somewhere in Italy. But that didn't happen. I literally, well, I won't say it. It's too crass. But, yeah, no, that didn't happen. So, no, not part of my plan.
So when I came up there, you know, it was about 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, you actually had just had a movie being shot there and had just been completed, and actually some of the rooms were still set up in from the movie. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'm actually an associate producer with the Booth Brothers and Spook TV, and so we filmed a couple of different things for Spook TV. One was called The Haunted Boy. It's the true story behind The Exorcist, and a lot of people don't realize that the Linda Blair character in real life was a boy. And so they had previously, Christopher and Philip, had gone and interviewed some of the priests involved. They went to the real house where the exorcism had been performed, interviewed a lot of people. They actually have the real diary from the original priest that did the exorcism. And so what we did at Rolling Hills was we did the reenactments and the flashbacks for the reenactment part of the story. And that will come out in October on Sci-Fi.
Cool. Are you going to be in it?
Oh, no. No. It was purely...
No.
No. That's okay.
Okay.
No. No.
All right.
But we also did... No, but we also did the... like a documentary on Rolling Hills, which will come out sometime, maybe in the fall, maybe a little bit later, depending on, you know, what other projects they have going. But they did do a documentary on Rolling Hills, and that should be coming out in not too distant future as well.
Oh, well, that's great. That'll be wonderful for you.
Yeah, really exciting. And one other thing I can't really say, but there's another major show out there with some ghost hunters that are on a different network that filmed recently, and it'll be coming out in the fall as well. That's all I can say.
Yeah, non-disclosure. Did you sign a non-disclosure statement there?
Yes, I did.
Yes, sir. Yeah, actually, weren't they coming just a couple of days after I had left? You mentioned that there was going to be some filming on site.
Yeah, and let me tell you, they said some amazing things on camera about Rolling Hills, about it being very, very haunted, like one of the most haunted places I've ever been. So it's pretty amazing.
Well, you know, it's a decent drive from my house to your location, and I'm definitely planning on coming back next year with my entire team, because it was pretty frustrating that night with the level of activity and the fact that I only had two arms, and I couldn't possibly have all the equipment that we would normally have out. You're absolutely right. It's an amazing place. But I was very surprised about the type of activity there. You know,
I'm glad to hear that.
Out, well, you know, it's an asylum. I'm thinking there's going to be crazy ghosts, you know, and they're going to be all bizarre, and it's going to be all weird, and it's going to be like, welcome to the Twilight Zone. And for me, it was totally the opposite. It was like I was running across spirits that were calm, and they're friendly, and you certainly have a fan club, because I experienced something with you on the initial tour of the building that I'd never seen before or experienced before. Folks, it was really interesting. Sharon's going through, and she's doing the historical aspect of the, you know, of the tour, and showing us the various locations, and also telling us about specific paranormal events that may have occurred. And the weirdest thing was, is I was hearing spirit voices, and it's like Sharon would say something, and then it was like a spirit was chiming in, like, "Oh yeah, yeah, and don't forget this," and it was the most amazing thing, and it was very friendly, and I, you know, like I said, I'd never experienced something like that, so it was really interesting.
Yeah, you and I haven't talked since then. I was really curious as to what kind of things you actually picked up, because I know you were hearing things, and you were starting to record early on in the tour, so I was really curious what kind of stuff you got.
Well, I've got one interesting thing that I wanted to share with you. You remember that night, there was a pretty incredible windstorm going on, and so that kind of, you know, causes some issues with audio recordings, and that's what I was primarily doing that night. But do you remember at one point you were actually with a group of psychics that were getting ready to do an event the following weekend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they got a recording, and you asked them to come down to where I was and share that recording with me?
Was it the mommy one?
It was the mommy one, yeah.
So,
basically, Sharon's with these psychics. They're getting ready for planning an event the following weekend. They get a recording of you hear two men talking, and in between, you hear very clearly this child say, "Mommy," just like that. And it was an absolutely incredible EVP. So I asked the guys that had recorded that. I said, "Where'd you do that?" And he says, "Oh, outside. That was in the hallway outside the Christmas room." And I said, "Well, that's weird, because we were in the Christmas room a half hour before you, and I was seeing a child, a little boy, in the hallway." And so that my experience kind of validated their piece of evidence. But at that point, I hadn't reviewed my evidence. Well, I had been recording when I was in the Christmas room as well. And one of the women that were with me, I told them that I sensed there was a child in the room, and a lot of times children respond better to women. And I knew that this woman had a little boy, so I suggested that she talk about what she does with her little boy. So she's talking to this little boy who's in the room and is basically saying, "Me and my little boy, we like to play hide and seek. Do you like to play hide and seek?" And I have a recording, and you hear this voice, and it sounds like a child say, "Count slower."
Oh.
And that was like a half hour before the other group got the recording of the mommy in the hallway. So,
earlier when I took you on the tour, we were in the infirmary, and remember I was walking backwards, and you asked me if I was sensitive, and I asked you why, and you said, "Well, because you've been hearing things," and you also just saw a little boy walk out of that room on my left, and I said, "Oh, wow, well, coincidentally, come here." We walked like 5 feet further, and I showed you the nursery that we had just set up that day.
Right.
And he'd come up, yeah, so I mean, yeah, that's really interesting.
So, you actually have certain sensitivities, and how do you use those sensitivities?
I'm sensitive. I'm not psychic. I'm not a medium. I can feel sometimes when they're around. Sometimes they'll let me hear them, but it's not as strong as other people's gifts. I mean, I think that spirits allow people to hear them and see them and things. Yes, you have to have some sort of a gift on your own. But, I mean, honestly, I don't take any credit for anything that I happen to be able to do, which is not that much.
Tell us about your photographs.
Well, my photographs, and like I said, again, I don't take any credit for them. I think they allow me to take pictures. It took me a long time to realize this, but not everyone takes the same kind of pictures I get. I tend to have an ability to take pictures that are pretty detailed, put it that way. A lot of full body apparitions. I happen to know No, I wouldn't say no. I happen to have an instinct of where to put the camera, and I'll get, like, these really crazy pictures, you know, full-body apparitions or just amazing things. I mean, even driving down the road in a car, I can take my iPhone and take a picture of the car next to me, and there'll be, like, this one time, which is really troubling, a child in the back seat that wasn't there, and she was blue. And I showed that to a friend of mine who is a medium, and she said, well, yeah, she drowned. That's why she's blue. And so that really, it's troubling sometimes, you know, to be honest.
Wow. That's interesting. You know, you showed me some of those photos, and I got to tell you, they're some of the most bizarre photos I've ever seen, just in terms of they are definitely unique, and it seems like there's definitely something going around, you know, going on in them. In terms of, you know, you being there, I mean, you've investigated there numerous times before you bought the place, and now you're there all the time. What's the most unique event that's occurred for you?
Recently or overall, Dan?
No, just overall, something that, you know, you might want to share with us.
Oh, God. Wow. I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you know, going way back in the beginning, which what intrigued me when I was first there, I mean, we were in the gift shop at one point using a shack hack. I was with Stacey Jones and, a couple of other people. And we were communicating with a gentleman named James. And he was just very articulate, coming right through the shack hack. And, I mean, making all these comments. And, I mean, there were four of us in the room, four women. And at one point I said to him, I said, James, can you see us? And he goes, see you? It's a flipping whorehouse down there, because we're all women. And he's not used to it. He was probably the old men's dormitory kind of situation. So, I mean, yeah, it's kind of a crass thing to say, but, you know, it's kind of funny. But, you know, it's just having so much activity there. And just having, you know, being able to get these amazing pictures. Roy, for instance, one of my team members recently got an amazing EVP of Roy. Roy had giganticism, and he was dropped off there when he was about 8 years old. His dad was a banker out of Rochester, and he was pretty humiliated because he didn't understand the disease that his son had, because at the age of 8, he was over 6 feet tall. So he dropped him off at the poor farm on the pretense that it was just temporary, was going to come get him, and he never did. His mother came and visited him quite often, but in the long and the short of it is Roy lived out his life there and died at the age, I think it was 57, at over 7 feet tall. But there was nothing wrong with the man other than he was completely and abnormally large. He was an incredible reader, loved books, and also loved classical music. So we play a lot of classical music for him. And one of my team members recently mentioned to him that they were going to bring him some different classical music, and would he like that? And they got an EVP of him saying, yes, that would be fine. I haven't had a chance to post it yet, but it's pretty incredible.
Wow, that's cool. Now, you have some photos of that shadow person. Is that correct?
Well, that's who I believe to be Roy. Yeah, he's pretty huge. You know, when he comes, he completely blocks out the light. Like I said, he's over 7 feet tall.
Yeah, that night on, I'm not sure which wing it was. It was in the newer section of the building. We were getting and seeing a lot of shadow activity. Is that something that's pretty common there?
It's actually well known for the shadow activity, shadow people.
Uh-huh.
And it's not the normal type of shadow people. I know a lot of people believe shadow people are shown with, like, fedoras and such, but these people, they're not like that. They are in shadows. They're like if you cast a shadow, you yourself will cast a shadow. You see your head and your arms and your legs. It's like that. They'll poke themselves out of a doorway. Excuse me one second. I'm going to cough. Excuse me. They'll poke themselves out of a doorway. You'll see an arm or a leg or a head, or you'll see them cross the hallway. They're very, very active, and you can almost, you know, call out to them, say, okay, we're ready to see you now. You know, can you come out? And they will. You will see them come out. They will block lights. They will block doorways and windows, and it's pretty amazing.
Have you personally experienced any, I don't know, when I was there, the spirits all seemed real friendly and engaging. Have you ever, you know, run into someone with an attitude there?
I haven't, but some of the people that I investigated recently have. There was a, a group, I want to say out of, and I hope I got this, I think they're out of New Jersey, and they got scratched a couple times. I've heard previously, before I came into the picture, a while ago, some woman got pushed out of a wheelchair. I think there are some curmudgeon-y ones there, to, you know, to put it nicely, but luckily I haven't run into too much of a attitude.
Okay. When you investigate just foul-wise, do you provoke spirits?
I don't, because you know what? I don't provoke there because I feel like they're going to be my family and I'm going to be their family. I know it sounds really weird, but like I said, I just feel like it's a different relationship for me now than it would have been in the past. So there I do not. No, I do not.
Okay. You know, when you were talking about kind of grouchy spirits, there was a male spirit on the top floor in one of the, like, an attic bedroom.
Yeah.
He was just, there was nothing, I mean, he wasn't, like, bad or anything, but it really, he felt grouchy. I that's all I can say. To me, the guy was a grouch, an old grouch. So, but like I said, you know, I was just amazed at, there was almost like a sense of peace there at the asylum that night. You know, it was just, it was nice. I really just really enjoyed it. It wasn't stressful. I mean, it was exciting, but it was like I said, it was definitely worth the drive.
You know what, though? It's interesting because the flavor of the place can change rapidly. Not a couple nights after you were there, I was there with a couple of friends. And it was just the three of us. We were up in the East Wing, and it got so overpowering and so uncomfortable. I mean, it just felt like they were coming in on us, and it was just way uncomfortable that we left. And that's a bold statement for me to leave my own place. But, I mean, it was really uncomfortable. So, I mean, you have days. I mean, they're cyclical. I think some of them come and they go, and, you know, some of them come forward and the other ones step back. And then, I don't know. I don't have the rhythm of the place yet.
I agree with you. I think that sometimes things come and visit that aren't necessarily there all the time, too. So that's definitely, a possibility. Now, you had an opportunity to investigate and see some of the top ghost teams in the country. Do you have a favorite?
That's not a fair question.
Oh, okay. Let me put it this way. Well, no, that wouldn't be a fair question either. But it's okay to have favorites. They could all be, great, but there's someone that's your favorite, maybe personality-wise. Maybe they got a wicked sense of humor. Maybe you're, like, really impressed with their technical skills. I don't know.
I like a lot of people. I'm intrigued by... And I've only investigated with him briefly once over in California, is Barry Fitzgerald, because he's very into the whole camera thing as I am. So I really admire what he's doing with photography and such, and working with the full spectrum and other types of equipment. So, I mean, that personally I'm always very intrigued by. So, but, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, people bring different things to the table. Rob Demarest is funny as hell. People may not know that. But, I mean, again, I happen to investigate with him at another location, through another event. And he was flipping hilarious. You know, he seemed so, straight-laced on TV. You know, Jason and Grant, and some other people I shall not name that recently came. I mean, they're all interesting, and they bring their own stuff to the table. I mean, I like a lot. I like people. I mean, I've always been in either the film business or in event marketing and trade shows and sales. So I'm a people person. So, I mean, I like people, dead or alive, I guess, apparently, but I like people. So,
yeah. So Sharon, what's the long-range plan for you in terms of Rolling Hills? Do you, have what I want to do in the next couple of years, what I want to see it 10 years down the road? I mean, what's your vision?
Well, obviously, I like to continue with the paranormal. I mean, I love the field. I think it's really fascinating, very interesting. The people that always come and visit, you know, again, bring it back to the people. I really enjoy people, and I think it's a really interesting field that's untapped, and that place has a lot of opportunity to really start documenting things properly. And if we can all get together and maybe start tracking our experiences and hopefully build a really good research center where people that have been there or are coming there will be able to log in and we can start collaborating together and maybe find some answers in the field, that would be my ultimate. With my film background, we want to start filming some more shows there, not necessarily paranormal. It's a great location to be used in other avenues for a location shoot for film or television or even still photography. I'd like to do some more things during the day to bring families there. It's a beautiful piece of property. Get them interested in the history, and then, you know, before you know it, you got them talking about ghosts anyway. So that would be really interesting. So maybe, you know, maybe do a huge Halloween event. Maybe, I don't know, there's a lot of potential there. It's 11.5 acres. It's a beautiful property. It should be enjoyed by everyone, not just the paranormal. And that's my goal, is to really get more people there in all avenues. Maybe do a wine and cheese festival. That would be kind of fun for me. Maybe do some ice skating. Maybe a paintball field. I don't know. There's a lot going on there.
All right. Multi-purpose location.
Yeah.
So in your email to me today, you mentioned that, you know, your husband was coming out tonight in a truck from California, and your dog's coming out with them. How do you think your dog's going to do in an environment like this?
Not well.
Not well?
Not well at all. Not well at all. Our place in California was rather active, and the guy's really sensitive. The dog is really, really sensitive, and I'd have a lot of battles with the spirits that were coming through and have to yell at them a lot. I mean, honest to God, the poor guy got touched a lot, and he's very sensitive. So it's going to be a challenge. The poor little guy's going to have a challenge. I'm worried.
I might have done this out of order. I asked you how the dog's going to handle all this, but how's your husband going to handle all this? What's his take on the paranormal?
Well, I'm more worried about the dog. Let him take care of himself. No, I'm just kidding. he's a skeptic, so I don't think it will bother him as much until something really dramatic happens. You know, he'll have to experience something dramatic on his own for him to really, you know, have a reaction. He's very skeptical.
Okay, so what'd you say? Is he a non-believer, do you think?
Oh, no. I mean, he's heard some EVPs. He's seen, you know, some pictures that were pretty blatant. And at that point, he'll like, okay, well, you know, there's something there. I don't know what kind of thing. But
okay.
No, he's a believer. He needs to be hit over the head before he actually says, okay, that's exactly what it was.
Okay.
And that's good. It keeps me grounded, you know. It's always good to have a skeptic in the group.
Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah, it always pays to have someone that's willing to question what's going on.
Exactly.
Sometimes skeptics are really just another name for a non-believer, and no matter what you present, they're going to shoot it down because they have a belief system and they can't see what's in front of them. But
I wouldn't say that he's that. I mean, he does believe. He just, you know, like, I think it comes, too, from learning and being in the field. Like, sometimes, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, you'll get a whole bunch of recordings, EVPs, and you'll listen to them. And you might not listen to them again for, I don't know, a few months. You might revisit them, and you'll pick out things that you didn't catch the first time because your ear becomes better and better attuned to whatever you're listening to. Well, that's how it is with him. I think that he doesn't quite necessarily always be able to pick out certain things because he doesn't understand either the cadence or the pattern of the speech. Or he just doesn't, like with a shack hack, it's really hard sometimes to hear what people are saying. So I think it just comes from learning and being around it more.
I agree. I think that it's almost like when you're learning a foreign language, you know, at some point it becomes natural and it's easy to hear. But initially it's not, and you know, you have all kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sharon, besides Rolling Hills Asylum. What's your next favorite place to investigate at?
I have two. One is the Queen Mary, because it was very close to my house, and I had some really amazing experiences there. There's a gentleman in the engine room, John Petter. John's very famous. He got killed when he was in his early 20s. He used to try to play chicken, from what I understand, when they used to have the drills to shut the watertight doors. And he would jump, he would wait till the very last second to go through the door before they slammed it shut. And one day he didn't make it, and he got killed. And he's very, very active. He's a very well-known spirit on the ship. And I've gotten amazing EVPs from him. I used to go down and say, "Hey, John, it's Sharon. I'm coming back to see you." And he'd say, "Thank you for coming," or "Hello, Sharon." So we've had like a really interesting little relationship, if you will, with a ghost. But that's always a special place for me. And then there's a theater in San Pedro that I used to bring my team to that I was the paranormal liaison for. And it was a pretty amazing place. No one investigated before my team and myself. And it leaves a lot to be discovered there. There's a lot of activity going on. It's pretty interesting.
That's cool. So I know you've been incredibly busy because you've actually only been there at the asylum now, what, about 3 months?
Yeah, permanently. I've been here since April.
Okay. So in your spare time, you know, have you had a chance to assemble a new team?
Well, we do have a new team, the Rolling Hills team. We haven't done anything outside of Rolling Hills as of yet, but they're all well-seasoned investigators. They're from other groups, and we all are working in unity together for Rolling Hills, and it's a pretty exciting thing.
Cool. I'm just curious, how many people do you have on your team?
10. We have 10.
Oh, that's a good-sized team.
Yeah, it's a really good question. Well, there's a lot to do there. I mean, what I would like to do is do similarly to what they do on the Queen Mary. There's a group that investigates the Queen Mary, and they've been doing it for years, and they're systematically going through the ship. And what they're doing is they're literally investigating top to bottom, inside and outside, every single square foot of that ship. So they're documenting, every room, everything. And they're going through it, and they're cataloging their evidence. And that's what I would like to do with Rolling Hills. I mean, they're the popular rooms. There's the second floor hallway, east wing, with the shadow people. There's the first floor east wing, that's the school room. There's the Christmas tree room. There's the organ room. But there's so many other rooms in there that people just do not go into and just don't investigate. So I'd like to systematically start really documenting and cataloging evidence and go through and start really hitting every single room and really trying to find out what's going on in that place and see if there's any correlation anywhere.
Sure. How big is the main building there?
Well, the west wing, east wing, and the tunnel that connects to the old laundry room and the boiler room, that is completely, it's 54,000 square feet.
Okay. Because, I was there for roughly 8 hours, and I felt like I just was jetting from place to place because I just wanted a little taste of everything. But I really felt if I was there with my full team for a week, it would just be scratching the surface.
Yeah, it's so funny now. It's all relative, I guess, because I used to think, oh, it's so big. And the first, month I was walking around, my legs were tired. I'm like, oh, my God, I had to go up another flight of stairs. Am I ever going to get to the other side of the building? And now I'm going through, I'm like, geez, I wish it was a little bit bigger. It's just me.
Yeah. Hey, Sharon, I've been, just looking at some of the stuff that's going on in the chat room, and there's been some talk about UFOs and aliens and stuff like that. And, when you were showing me some of the photos that you've taken at Rolling Hills and on the grounds, we kind of had a discussion about the possibility of perhaps there's aliens there as well. Want to share your thoughts?
Yeah,
your thoughts on that?
Well, I all I'm going to say is I do think. I mean, I I think that there's alien activity. I think there's a lot of activity there. I think that based upon not my presumption, but things that I've either got on audio or on camera or just things I've experienced personally, I think that there's elementals there. I believe there are fairies there. I believe that there's a troll there because I have an EVP from the tunnel saying, I'm a troll. Hello. And I do think that, all right, I mean, if it walks like a duck, I guess it's a duck. I mean, he tells me he's a duck. He tells me he's a troll. But I do think that there are UFO activity there. There's the third floor solarium. It's three, actually, I'm sorry, second floor solarium is three stories up from the ground. Glass on all sides. There's not a tree outside the building. There's one across the driveway, but not against the building anywhere. And I have a photograph from the inside of the building looking towards the third floor solarium where there's this big metal wing outside the window. And you can tell it's outside the window because the panes in the window, the wood that or whatever it is that, that frames up the window, is over the metal wing. And there's writing on the windows that are backwards. So you know you can just tell it's on the other side of the glass. And there's somebody, I'll say a man, but somebody standing on the wing wearing a cloak, a hooded cloak, and it's three stories up. And it looks like a metal wing, and he's standing on the edge of a wing. I don't know what that is. To me, that's possibly otherworldly.
You showed me that photo, and I was like, wow, now that's different. Hey, folks, this is a unique photo, I'm telling you. It's definitely one of a kind.
I think I have it on the website. I think I put it on the website.
You should state your website. Give everybody your website.
Oh, yes, I guess I should. Thank you. It's www.rollinghillsasylum.com.
All right. Now, there it is. Doug just put it up there for us.
Right.
Oh, thank you. I did too. Thank you.
Yeah, I even
so under evidence, I think it's on there. I think I put it up there. It's an interesting picture. That was, again, one of the reasons why I bought the property. I mean, I took that picture 2 years ago. And it's funny, I've shown it to a few other people, and other people have told me they've gotten something similar out there over the years. So I don't know what that means, but to me, it's like somebody's looking in that window from the outside.
Well, you know, when you and I were talking about the possibility of overlap between, you know, hauntings and aliens and how it all may just somehow merge together in some way that we don't quite understand, you know, I always I thought intellectually that that was a possibility, but about 2 weeks after I was up with you, we had an investigation, and myself and another person saw a three-foot-tall white entity. And we had all kinds of stuff going on with our equipment at the time, and the flare camera wouldn't focus on it. It was absolutely crazy stuff going on. And I'm thinking at this point that that's now part of my world, that possibly there's, like, interdimensional beings that were – well, Doug likes to hear that. But, you know, it's, no, I mean, honest, you know, I was open to the possibility – and maybe it takes being, you know, slapped aside the head for you to, like, go to the next step to, like, truly thinking, okay, this is it. This is part of the deal. Not sure how it shakes out in the entire big picture, but I'm definitely a believer at this point.
Well, it's funny. I've gotten really interesting things off the shack hack in different locations that really make me take pause. I mean, I was at Linda Vista in California. And I was there with a good 15 other people, and we were sitting around using the shack hack in one of the hallways. And we had it was a two-way conversation going. There was a man and a woman talking, and one of them was saying, "Can you see them?" And the guy says, "Yes, I see them." And the woman goes, "Don't." She goes, "I can't remember who said what." One of them says, "Don't shoot them." And the man said, "Oh, the woman goes, don't shoot them." The man goes, "Why not?" And he goes, "It's Earth." Flipping me out, telling you. It was very strange.
It's Earth?
Yeah. The man and the woman were talking back and forth. Can you see them? Yes, I see them. Don't shoot them. Why not? It's Earth. I have it recorded. I don't know what that means. But, I mean, if they're talking about it's Earth, that means to me that it's something not from Earth that is talking about Earth.
So, you know, there's a lot of controversy about Radio Shack hacks and various, you know, the Ovilus and its derivatives and whatnot. But, you know, I haven't quite decided where I fall on that, because over the years, you know, I've also experimented with, like, the Radio Shack hack and stuff. And single word answers, I just can't go there. You know what I'm saying? I just can't go there and say this is definitive that I'm communicating with something. But, you know, I've over the years gotten a couple times where I've gotten sentence replies. And
exactly.
That kind of really blows me away, because, you know, the frequency is set so it's so fast that basically, it's hitting station after station after station, and you can barely get a word in before the station changes. So the odds of being able to create an intelligent sentence randomly that appears to be answering your question, to me, is like, that's puzzling.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I can, you know, my psychic abilities is like tapping into Doug's head right now. He's going, well, maybe it's PK. And you know what? Maybe it is PK. Maybe the operator is able. Maybe there's a human agent, because they want to hear this or whatever, that they are, in fact, creating that phenomena. And I'm okay with that, too, because that's pretty cool if you think about that as a possibility.
Exactly.
That a human mind is manipulating a piece of electronics. So, you know, a lot of times I know people get all disappointed when something gets proved or disproved, but myself, I get excited. You know, if someone could prove to me that Radio Shack hacks are not spirit voices, but examples of human PK, I'd be totally happy with that. I would think, wow, that's great, you know, but
yeah,
that's just me.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I believe that. No, I believe that, too. I mean, anything that's really so phenomenal that, you know, it's either created by the human mind or from another entity or another space. I mean, it's all pretty phenomenal when you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a question that I'm sure that Doug would like me to ask you. He's kind of shy sometimes.
What are you doing? Reading my mind or something? And I'm shy?
I'm a Scorpio and I'm married, yeah.
Now, he wants me to ask you, what do you think about orbs?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's funny because I don't get an awful lot of orbs in my photographs, which is really weird. I know a lot of other people get orbs all the time. I get very, very few of them. I believe that if they're in motion and self-illuminating, that it's something moving, and it's more, I don't want to say believable. I think it's more something to consider. I think that a lot of people look at orbs and a lot of them are dust and moisture. I mean, I really do. I think you don't know what you're looking at sometimes. But I do believe that there are some orbs that are really, truly orbs that are in motion and self-illuminating.
See, Doug, I told you you'd like her.
Well, that was a good
question. I'm you know, for someone who bought an asylum and he doesn't have literally a pot to pee in, I'm really pretty intelligent, I guess. I guess I'm pretty logical. But other than buying the asylum and not knowing anything better, but yeah.
Well, so any big plans for the 4th of July?
Well, we were going to have big plans, but now that the husband is coming in with the dog and he's a couple of days late, we're under the gun to get everything unpacked. So I'll be working like a dog, unpacking the truck, trying to get my stuff unpacked. We had to postpone a couple of things. We had to move a couple of things around because of this last-minute glitch. He was supposed to be here a couple of days ago, so kind of interfered with the 4th of July. But going forward, we actually have some really good things. Troy Taylor is actually doing an event in November. We've got an event coming up in August 14th, where Glenn White, the medium that you were talking about, the psychic medium, he's doing a psychic walkthrough and a gallery reading. We've got Stacey Jones coming out for that event from Central New York Ghost Hunters. She was on a haunting. So we've got an event coming up August 14th. I've got a few other things in the works I can't quite talk about right now for some other events, but if you check the website over the next week or two, there are going to be some other events cropping up pretty quick.
You should explain to folks how they can arrange to come and investigate there.
Basically, right through the website, you can pretty much buy your ticket right through the website. with a credit card. We take private teams. There are public nights called captive nights. The private nights are called quarantine nights. We have some abbreviated evenings that are called detained. Basically, the captive nights and the quarantine nights, you come in at 9 p.m. and leave at 5 a.m. The detained nights are shorter. They're a four-hour stint. And prices start at $35 and go from there. And we're really easy going. We'll take you through the tour of the building, and then on the public nights or the captive or detained nights, basically, we'll take you on the tour, and then you're welcome to go off and investigate on your own. Sometimes people ask us to join them, and that's great. If you don't want us to join you, we won't. Sometimes they want us to show them, spend more time in some of the hot spots or try to stir up activity, and we will. Otherwise, you guys are welcome to investigate on your own. We're there just for safety and in case you have any questions. And we don't hover with you. You guys go off on your own.
And that's absolutely what my experience was there. Sharon, it just occurred to me, something that is unique about your location rather than other ones is you've been staging some of the rooms. You want to tell us why you do that and some of the examples of the staged rooms?
Well, some of the rooms we're actually trying to recreate from photographs that we've seen from the building and blueprints. So, excuse me. So basically, like the chapel, we always knew it was the chapel. We verified it on the blueprints. We found a photograph of how the chapel was set up, and we happened to have enough furniture in the building that was similar enough to replicate a chapel. So we set it up, and since we've done that, it's almost like the Singapore theory. It stirred up activity, and it seems to be much more active. So we're going through and picking select rooms and trying to either recreate or make something similar that was there. And it seems to I don't know if it gives a comfort level to the spirits or makes them remember or what it is, but it seems to be working. We have a nursery. There's another room, a shock therapy room that was in the old infirmary. We set that up. There's another exam room that we set up in the infirmary. I mean, it's just, we're just trying new things and seeing what happens.
Well, the night that we were there, you guys had just finished putting the nursery together. And I told you at the end of the night that that was probably one of the most active locations that night in terms of my experiences was in there. So I think that whatever you did certainly, stirred things up. And I don't mean in a bad way. I mean, I think it got the spirits' attentions, and they were like, checking the place out and obviously, in some way, responding to the environment that you had created.
Well, it's funny because, like I said earlier, I started off on the tour, and you had said you'd seen that little boy walk out of one of the rooms on the left and going across the hall towards that room, towards the nursery that we just built that day. So, yeah. I mean, it seems to be working. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, the kitchen is my next big project. The kitchen needs some work. There's a lot of literally trash that needs to be brought out, empty boxes and things like that. But there's a lot of other stuff in there that we can, move around and try to make it look like it was when it was a kitchen. And I think that would be a really interesting place once we get that done.
Well, that's going to be, first of all, it's going to be a big job because I remember what it looked like. But once it's done, that'll be great. That'll be great. You can, cater events there and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe the ghosts will do some catering for me.
There's a question in the chat room, too, there. Why is construction conducive to activating spirit energy?
Excuse me. Well, I mean, I believe that there's a theory that it just kind of stirs things up. It changes the energy level. It's almost like when I have a friend. I think you might have met Maury. She'll go into a location and to change the energy if it's too quiet and things aren't happening. I don't want to say scream, but she'll yell really loudly, like, hello, and she'll change the vibrational level in the room or in the building. And I think that's what happens when you stir things up. It changes the vibrational level, it changes the energy, and it makes things different. And that's definitely my opinion. I don't know what the actual real, if there was a real scientific reason behind it, but that's what I believe. It just changes the energy a little. It's like if you change your room around. Like if I don't know, I had a living room in California that, I mean, I was just so sick of the living room, just so sick of being in there. And just was like, and I knew if I just changed it around, I would feel better. Almost like feng shui. And sure enough, I changed around and it just changed my whole outlook. It was, instead of going out and spending X amount of dollars on new furniture, I just moved it around. It felt great. And I think it's something like that.
Well, you know, I know that like when my wife moves all the furniture around and then I end up walking through the house in the dark, I usually have a few choice words to say when I bump into things that are now different. And, you know, maybe it's somewhat the same for the spirit world. You know, you change what they're used to and they react to that. You know, we're getting down to the last 5 minutes of the show. So, you know, it's been great having you here tonight. And we really appreciate it. And I'm going to turn the show back over to Doug so Doug can do the things that Doug does best.
Now, well, I appreciate it, John, and I really hope you come back on. We'll have to try to do some UFO exploring as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to hold you to it that once things settle down up there for you, which I'm sure will be in the next week or two, you need to come down to Jordan Springs and investigate with me. I know you'll enjoy it.
I would love to. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's been great having you on the show, Sharon. Some interesting stuff. And everybody take a look at her website, rollinghillsasylum.com, correct, Sharon?
Yeah, thank you very much.
And you can arrange to go there and investigate yourself. All the information is there on Sharon's website. Next week, Dr. David Lewis Anderson returns to the show. It's a special 90-minute show next week. We're going to be talking about time slips, time control, and anomalous parallels with Dr. Anderson. He's a very eloquent man, a physicist, I believe, a researcher, and he's got some interesting concepts, not to mention an open mind toward paranormal activity. So we'll be looking for some parallels and some possible things that could be happening, you know, naturally with natural laws that could be interpreted as paranormal activity. So we'll be looking forward to that. We appreciate everybody being in the chat room tonight, your questions, your comments. If you haven't visited Paranexus.org, please do so. We'd love to have you as a member. We just recently upgraded our download section. We have over 40 files there that are available to members, including a number of informative ebooks that are not available free elsewhere. We just expanded the store a little bit too. We just started doing an offering, I should say, background checks. So if you have a team and you want to do background checks on your members, that would be a cool thing. You can do it. Members is $5, non-members is $10, but that's always a good thing to have. You know, it reassures your clients if they know that. So anyway, take a look at Paranexus.org. If you're looking for some paranormal certification courses, we have those on ParanexusAcademy.org. Again, Sharon, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much, Doug and John. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And John, thanks for hosting the show tonight. You did a great job.
Well, thank you, Doug. I appreciate it.
And to
and
our
Sharon,
listeners, go ahead, John.
I was going to say, Sharon, I'll get with you at some point in the not-too-distant future, all right?
That would be great. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I really appreciate it. And come visit us soon.
And if you, we'd like to invite everybody to come and join us on Monday night, too, for Informal Paranormal. Very informal and laid back. A great place to come and talk about ideas, you know, do some brainstorming. So hope to see you Monday night,
I like
10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the same place, Paranexus Universe. Folks, hope everybody has a great week, a great 4th of July if you're in the U.S., and a great night. Good night, everybody.
Right, thank you.
Paranexus Universe.